and welcome to Pete's Percussion Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Zambito, and we're here with Basic Week. We made it. This is episode 418 of the show, and it's part one of our annual Basic Preview episodes. Today, we'll hear from four guests, all of whom are performing in some facet on the New Music Focus Day on drum set this Thursday, November 14th. In order, you'll hear from Joseph Van Hassel, Melissa Wang, Olivia Sirasan, and Catherine Irwin. We'll get to them all shortly. But first up, how are you all doing? It's been a while, right? This is the longest break I've had for the podcast in a very long time. And it was not by design. As sometimes happens with the show, I run into periods of time where it's hard to find guests, or as is the case currently, I have a few partial interviews that are nearly done, but myself and the guest have not been able to find another time to finish them out. The hope was to get some of these completed prior to right now, but that's not been able to happen. I do hope to share those interviews with you at some point very soon. In the meantime, and the last time I've been on with you was at the end of October, it's been a pretty challenging few weeks. Politics-wise, semester-wise, just tough, trying to balance everything out, staying healthy. I know many of you, myself included, are dealing with some personal things right now, but I hope you are all managing. And I hope that you are all staying safe and mentally okay as you're able to do so right now. As always, please check in and stay connected with each other, because there's nothing worse than losing connection. Reach out if you need to myself or whoever you have in your life that can do that for you. I mean it. There have been good things, too. Marching Mizzou is doing really well and just announced that we'll be performing in London for London Band Week in June of 2026. The football team continues to eke out exciting win after exciting win after exciting win. And the women's volleyball team, of which I direct the pep band, is on fire right now and continues to play incredibly well. Additionally, I was very fortunate to get to be a part of Mizzou's percussion ensemble concert that occurred this past Sunday and work with the students in the studio of my great colleague, frequent podcast guest, and good friend, Megan Arnes. I got to coach a sextet of percussion ensemble members playing the piece of previous podcast guest Joe W. Moore III, Dankium, and it went over really well. It's been a lot of fun getting to work with that group, and I hope to be regularly involved in activities with the percussion studio moving forward. So, it's just a typical November in college life, which also means PASIC 2024. I'm very much looking forward to seeing everyone there, getting the usual selfies with my guests, frequently meeting them for the first time in person, or just catching up with old friends. As always, if you're familiar with the show and like it, well, one, please alert everyone you know, but at PASIC, if you see me, please stop by and say hi. I love getting to meet the folks who enjoy the show. Okay, let's get to today's guests. As usual, I'll be presenting these interviews in chronological order as the guests will appear on the PASIC program. For today's episode, all of the guests are appearing as part of the New Music Sessions that will be happening in Room 120 during PASIC, and I'll introduce each of them, the time they're performing, the piece they're performing, and then I'll turn it over to them. So let's get to it. First up is Joseph Van Hassel. Joseph is currently the director of percussion studies and chair of the music department at the University of North Carolina at Pembroke. He will be performing the work Face by David McBride and will be doing so with frequent podcast guest Alexandros Fragiskatos. The two of them will perform on the opening 9 a.m. New Music Session. And here's Joseph talking about his presentation.
So David McBride was a teacher and mentor of mine at the Hart School, which is where I did my doctorate. And he was on the composition faculty there. So I worked with him in the composer's ensemble. Even though I'm not a composer, he often recruited percussionists to play in that. And then I took some theory classes with him, ended up commissioning a lot of pieces from him. This particular piece is from 1986, Face for Drum Set Duet. So I'm not old enough to have commissioned that from him. But it's a drum set duet. And as the title Face indicates, the two performers, Alex and I, are facing each other. So we both have full drum sets. And then there's this rack in between us with some triangles and additional cymbals hanging that we both play. So there's a visual aspect to the piece as well. And if anyone's familiar with David McBride's piece Quiet, maybe his most popular piece, percussion ensemble, there's a heavy theatrical element to that. It's not so heavy in Face, but it was something he was interested in. David McBride passed away a number of years ago, so unfortunately I wasn't able to ask him about the piece. There's been at least one other performance that Jan Williams did in Buffalo in the 1980s, and that's all I could really find about it. So I think this is definitely the first PASIC performance and possibly the one of the first performances ever of this older piece.
Is it published? Is this the thing, like, it wasn't published? Was it just kind of part of manuscripts, or how do you even know about it?
Yeah, when I was a student of David's, I asked him about his percussion music, and he gave me just a whole pile of photocopies, basically. So yeah, this was manuscript. It may have been published by the American Composers Alliance at one point, although it's long out of print. I actually have my own publishing company, Media Press, which I bought in 2019, I think. And so I have plans to publish the piece eventually.
Because it was in kind of the form that you mentioned, manuscript, you get a stack of things to work yeah. on and all that. What kinds of updates were you having to, if any, were you having to make to just make it a, you know, something that other people could play and not have like a discussion with you about what is required?
When Alex and I were preparing the piece, we had a lot of Zoom calls, actually, just trying to decipher the score. And a lot of it was just the instructions, because it's somewhat theatrical, because there's a lot of, there's a lot of tempo changes and stick changes and some areas that involve improvisation. It wasn't always clear from the text he wrote in the piece exactly what he wanted. The main thing is clarifying the instructions as Alex and I interpreted them.
Performance side, you mentioned this kind of, you've mentioned these theatrical elements and this, I guess, shared setup. Mm-hmm. So does that mean that the two of you are actually like very close to one another so that you can reach, or does it actually ask you to like get out of the set to play other things?
We're as close as we can get to each other. So our bass drums of the drum set, because of the rack, aren't quite touching, but ideally we're as close together so we can reach. And, you know, there's sometimes where we hit a triangle in unison, for example, or even at the end of the piece, we reach over and play each other's cymbals.
Nice. It's almost as if it's intending to be like the annoying person who wants to play your drum set when you're like, you need, please step away. Like, it's that kind of thing at the end.
Yeah, I there's an element of humor in it for sure.
How would you characterize the style? I mean, is this the drum set writing like as if it's a multi-instrument, or are there like, you know, groove elements that are part of this?
It's more of a multiple percussion piece for drum set. Drum set's not one of my strongest areas, so I think it's well suited for someone like me who doesn't feel that comfortable behind the drum set.
How would you ascertain kind of difficulty level for this piece?
The actual playing, like the written material, isn't incredibly difficult. So maybe intermediate level. It's more the chamber aspect of it's very tricky.
Well,
part of it is the tempo. There's multiple tempo changes, sometimes without any warning. Like you have to jump from quarter note equals 72 to quarter note equals 112, for example, without any pause. Coordinating that between two people and making sure we're on the same page tempo-wise is tricky. the theatrical element has to be rehearsed, because there's times where we're supposed to turn the pages of the score together or change sticks at the same time. And then there are some tricky rhythms that also need to be coordinated, such as at the end of the piece, there's this kind of hocketing thing that gradually speeds up as well. So not only are we pocketing with each other, but the speeding up is also something that was challenging to rehearse, make sure again that we're doing that together and on the same wavelength with how we want to do that accelerando.
Is there anything about, because there are two drum sets, whether the tuning has to be similar, tom size, anything that's specific there, or that maybe you figured out rehearsing the piece and you're like, oh, we should probably consider these aspects?
Nothing specific in the score about whether the tuning or the drums should be the same. I kind of like, and I know having worked with David for many years, the composer, I think he likes freedom and indeterminacy. He was a big student of Cage's music, John Cage. So he was really into indeterminacy and freedom in some sense. And so I kind of like the idea that the drum sets are different and the cymbals are different.
Because it's, you know, as a, you know, you kind of admitted just like, you know, your best talents on percussion, you've said, kind of are elsewhere versus mm-hmm. drum set. Just kind of like either coordination thing in terms of kind of difficulty level with this piece versus other styles of drum set playing you've typically done?
Coordination, yeah. And the element of improvisation I found difficult. And again, I attribute to not feeling that comfortable on drum set. I don't know, for whatever reason, I found that no matter how much I practice, maybe just the way my brain's wired, improvisation, I still have a very hard time with, like making sure I stay in time, for example. So that's the improvisation element has been tricky as well for me. And I imagine someone who's more comfortable on drum set would potentially find that less challenging.
Because this is a drum set focus for the new music, how did you all see that this piece, like, you know, nicely fit in to what the plan is for what Pasek is doing for sure. New music this year?
The title of the new music day is Drum Set Beyond Its Roots. So I thought this was one of a number of proposals I submitted.
For
this day, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I like the idea, as I said, not considering myself a legit drum set player, this idea of exploring other avenues of that instrumentation. So I had, a number of pieces. Stuart Saunders Smith is another composer I've worked with a lot. And so I submitted some of his music and then a number of other things, all more geared towards multiple percussionists playing drum set rather than a drum set player playing drum set.
Next up on the show is Melissa Wang. Melissa is a freelance performer, educator, and composer based in the Chicago area. She will be performing a solo work for drum set and multi-percussion with speaking part called Self-Accusation by Kate Neal with text by Peter Konka. She'll be performing this at the 11 a.m. new music session on Thursday. And here's Melissa talking about her PASIC presentation.
So tell me a little bit more about the piece, the composer, how you came to it.
Yeah, the piece, I was introduced to the piece by Bonnie Whiting, my professor at University of Washington. And at first, you know, this is the type of music that I'm not very used to playing or practicing. This is completely out of my comfort zone. And especially the speaking part, Dr. Bonnie Whiting's main focus is speaking percussion. Well, one of her main foci is speaking percussion. Yeah, so this was completely out of my comfort zone and the first speaking percussion piece I've performed and practiced. I really respect the writing. There are a lot of creative use of vocal percussion in the piece, such as like using the word and then having that combined with wiro. So you would have a, along with the wiro sound, which connects, and it's just a gorgeous sound.
Oh, well, tell me a little bit more about the structure and how the spoken word part is kind of how this works for this particular piece.
The text follows a Kiryu Hanka's writing, which is about the first few words of the text is, I came into the world, and it's a social commentary on pretty much being forced into this world and forced to live by this world's views and rules. And that's the text part. And Kate Neal supplements that text through multi-percussion writing. So she uses a lot of found sounds, such as metal mixing bowl, metal pipes, the circular chainsaws. Scary stuff. I actually accidentally stabbed myself way too many times with the metal chainsaws, but I feel like I am at a place now that I can comfortably be around it because I duct taped it down.
Oh, good.
And it won't hurt me anymore.
Great.
Except when I'm trying to grab something over it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a reasonable assessment, I think, at this point.
Yeah, and in between the so we start with the multi-percussion solo and we go into the drum set solo. Before the drum set solo starts, there are a lot of clues that the drum set solo is happening, other than, you know, the physical representation of the drum set already being there, but there are hints of the drum set coming in. The drum set serves as kind of a rock out, the emo phase, I don't want to be you, I don't want to be you, kind of parts where the whole thing is just loud in a rock out section. She literally writes punk-like, jagged, free in the last improvisation section.
That's awesome. How much of the score for you is notated specifically? How much is free or like in the style of, as you just kind of explained?
Yeah, the notation is all written in. I add my own physical theatrical elements, such as how to play certain sections. So I would play some certain sections with a very free molar stroke, a lot of upstroke flowing patterns. And then whereas some sound effects would line up really well with theatrics, where I quickly hit the mallets and have a quick upstroke instead. Adding on to the notation question, the only section that's improvised is the last jagged free section. Everything else is notated in terms of pitches, what to say. What she doesn't write is how do you say it? Although there is some specific instructions, such as this part will be whispered, this part will be spoken in a monotone. But there are a million ways you can speak monotone, a million ways you can speak whispering. So when there's a section such as the beginning that says close mic, whispered, instead I use more of a breathy tone. Into the world.
In disclosure, I have not done a work that requires like this kind of speaking ideas and the ways of acting like this in terms of how you interact with text. So what are some of the decisions as you've been working on this, what are some of the decisions that you've realized you have to make that it seems like they would be in the script it's like an implied thing in terms of how you artistically decide how to do these things? What are some of the decisions you've had to make it work for you?
One part of the decision is what accents or what words to emphasize. So the text is underneath all of the multi-percussion and drum set notation, but she doesn't write which words should be accented. So depending on the context, she has a lot. She uses Peter Hanka's text as using it as parts of sections. So there would be repeating phrases. So there would be a section that says, I was able to want, I was able to walk on two legs, I was able to play dead, I was able to kill myself. And here she repeats, I was, I was, I was, I was, I guess Kate and Peter Hanka. And here we have a choice. What are we emphasizing here? Is it the was? Is it what comes after it? What are we emphasizing? Especially in that section, I start with emphasizing, I was able to want, I was able to walk on two legs. And then when we get to the darker part of that section, I start emphasizing more of those words. I was able to play dead. I was able to kill myself. Something like that. So choosing which syllables or words I should emphasize. Also, another decision I need to make in this piece using the text and combination of music is when I play when I strike an instrument and say the word at the same time, you don't really hear the words itself. So you almost have to say right before you strike, or say right after you strike by maybe a 30-second note. And that has been really, really hard trying not to intentionally line up the words. So those are a couple of decisions I had to make in that piece.
So on that last note about not having them line up, have you been practicing to get ready to perform this? Have you been practicing like a slow down to speed up and then kind of like pushing it faster as you would for, you know, some other, if you're not doing a speaking thing and you're preparing? Or is it like, does it not make sense to do that and you have to kind of go at regular speed and just be like, I hope this works?
I definitely started with taking everything way slower. Now that I've had this piece in my pocket for a while, around a year, it's more appropriate to play it all up tempo. And sometimes I do need to check certain sections and re-practice certain sections, especially when I'm recording myself, making sure that when I listen back to those recordings, sometimes I'm thinking I can't hear myself at all in that section. And so I need to break it down, take it real, real, real slow, and make sure that those 30-second notes, 30-second notes are very clear. The 30-second notes between the playing and the speaking, I would even say maybe 64th notes. Is that the next one? 30-second notes?
Yeah.
64th?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's really subtle, but it needs to be done, especially on the drum set section. The drum set section, there are a lot of points where I even had to change where the text is from the music itself. I had to place them even a measure later because there are some really dense drum set playing. So there's, especially when you play the cymbals, that will wash out your voice completely. And I need to find a different place to put that text while still making sure that we are all saying that I'm saying the text all in order so that I don't disrespect and disrupt Peter Hanka's texts.
You could take this into account with the speaking part or without. How challenging is the percussion performing in this work?
Starting out when I practice it, yeah, it's real, real hard. The multi-percussion part itself, there are quite a lot of tempo changes. So I have to do a lot of metric modulations in my head before I play the next section, and taking into account those words. So you're almost counting yourself in two different tempo, the same tempo, but the multi-percussion playing and the text comes at different times. So it's the same tempo, but in your head, they kind of start, you have to start counting at different times when you're going to say each thing. The multi-percussion part took a very, very long time to learn, and I consider myself a fast learner, especially when it comes to multi-percussion solos. And I do admit, multi-percussion solos, every time you learn them, it's a completely new system right. most of the time. It's like rereading or relearning the musical alphabet.
Right.
So this was, in a way, taking into account that. But most importantly, there is a lot of multi-percussion instruments, and that looks like a million different lines that you have to incorporate and learn. A lot, especially the first section, when the opening, you use all the multi-percussion instruments except for the drum set parts. So that's metal bowl, metal pipes, five metal pipes, which makes my life even harder, but even more fun to learn. Three Indian bows, the two circular chainsaws, two shakers, a box, a cardboard box, and taking into account all of those instruments and trying to relearn the alphabet is difficult, considering, even though considering I myself feel comfortable reading multi-percussion solos fast, usually.
Yeah.
And adding those words are a whole nother layer of extreme. And I feel I was very overwhelmed in the beginning. I had no idea where to start when I was learning this piece. Do I start at the end? Do I start in the middle? Do I start in the easiest part of the piece? Well, we all know we should start at the hardest part of the piece. So that's where I started. The most important, the most difficult thing is balancing my voice with different multi-percussion. Each multi-percussion instrument has a different dynamic, even if you play them on the same stick level. Yeah. And that's been really hard, trying to use different stick heights for different instruments to get that same dynamic level.
How much gear do you have to bring with you?
So the gear I have to bring is a drum set, the multi-percussion equipment, which is just a table of stuff, which I'm really happy about. The drum set is, you know, is the typical schlepping of the bass drum, or the kick drum, the floor tom, the high tom, the ride cymbal, the hi-hat cymbal, the crash cymbal. And then we also add cowbell, brake drum. And honestly, in the learning stages of this piece, this drum set actually has way more equipment than I am performing it on PASIC. It's a hefty drum set part. So the original instrumentation actually was contained two wood blocks, two cowbells, one brake drum. And in my opinion, it definitely served a purpose in the piece, but the original reason why I had to condense that drum set in the first place was because of space, and I just could not fit all of them in one. So I cherry-picked my favorite ones. So that was one cover, one brake drum. I forgot about talking about the splash cymbal. But yeah, that gear plus the multi-percussion, which I can just put it all in a bag, set it up when I get there.
Did you premiere this piece, or you said you found it through Dr. Whiting, right?
I found it through Dr. Whiting. Since then, yeah, a lot of people have performed that piece. I've seen some YouTube videos of it, and every single version is just completely different in terms of the way that the performers use their voice. A lot of the versions use almost a meditative kind of voice, almost a whisper throughout the entire time. Even on the drum set solo, it's very calm. Very calm, and although monotone, as Kate Neo asked, It's definitely a different interpretation than I have, which is very angry, emo teenager style.
Awesome.
Oh, my favorite punch about figuring. Oh, I forgot about this one. There's a sleigh bell. There's sleigh bells in this piece too. Hand sleigh bells. So that sleigh bell is laid down, and I've had a lot of trouble getting the sleigh bell to resonate its entire body. Usually you hold it up,
yeah.
Get the jingles out. And I've toyed with putting it on a, putting it on a cymbal stand. I've tried picking it up and then playing it really quickly, but the piece doesn't really call for that. You really need to lay that sleigh bell down. One creative way of playing the sleigh bell that Dr. Bonnie Whiting and I figured out is using it as a whirl. So, I was going to demonstrate, but I realized this is just audio.
Yeah.
One creative way to play the sleigh bells is using the back end of your mallets and scraping it like a whirl. So you get the full sound of the sleigh bells while also getting the jingles and body in the sound. A very full sound is our goal. And even though hitting it at the handheld punt does do something with the head punt, the mallets, I very much enjoy. I am obsessed with the whirl sound on the sleigh bells.
Now we will talk to our next PASIC presenter, Olivia Sirasan. Olivia is currently a master's student studying at the University of Michigan and is a musician, percussionist, teacher, singer-songwriter, composer, and producer. She will be performing the work 37 Across, 39 Down by Ansel Neely, and will be doing so at the 3 p.m. new music session on Thursday. Here's Olivia talking about her upcoming PASIC performance.
This is Ansel Fitzgerald Neely. He's a composer and percussionist as well. And it's a crossword puzzle piece. So the way it's created is he sent me the question, what's your like starting word? What do you want to be your starting word? And I can't even remember what it was, but it ended up, he started from that word or that phrase and then built the crossword around it. And it ended up being a 37 across 39 down crossword.
So you are playing by yourself with... Yeah.
So I have, there's going to be a click in my ear, and I'm playing along with a lot of like really distorted and strange sounds that are actually the way it's related to the crossword that's originally the creation of the piece is that all of the sounds used in the audio file, the full audio file, come from or are related to the crossword in some shape or form. And I think like one of the words that was used was like stressed that came out of the crossword. And so at the very end of the piece, there's like stressed, stressed, stressed. If you can, I'm not sure if anyone will remember to listen for that, but it's certainly one of the things that stuck out to me. I was like, why did you use the word stressed? And he's like, just happened to be one that fit in the crossword. So
what was it about the prompt that kind of led you to say, oh, I know who would be good to create something for this?
I had actually played the piece and learned it and commissioned it all before the PASIC new music research was announced. And that's because Ansel Fitzgerald, who I'm going to refer to as Fitz because he goes by his middle name pretty frequently, Fitz had wrote previously a similar solo with the same type of structure and concept for Cameron Leach. And that one is 63 across, 81 down. And Cameron played that, I think, 2 years ago at PASIC. So yeah. I really enjoyed the concept. And I thought it was fun. I really liked the sounds. I liked the structure. And my friend Emily had played that piece as well. So I was like, hey, would you be willing to write me like a similar type of piece? And I believe it's a slow burn, but he's in the process of doing like a few of them. So in the end, there's going to be like a collection of crossword puzzle drum set pieces.
Cool. Yeah, I had seen, actually, I think I interviewed Cameron for that PASIC. And I remember I was at that concert. I don't know if I caught everything, but I remember he played something very early on that was so physically demanding. And I remember watching him. I don't know if you were at that concert, but I remember watching thinking, yeah. I was like, dude, you got like 45 minutes of music left. Are you going to make it? For real. And he's a young athletic person. I think he was fine, but you know.
Right. I'm glad that I like only have to focus on this too, because it's like, okay, I think the, oh my gosh, I can't even remember. I feel like the piece is like 6 minutes long maybe. And so I'm like, okay, got to focus, dial it in. And then once I'm done, I'm like, all right, it's the middle of Thursday. I still have the rest of PASIC to like relax a little.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. I definitely see that as one of the advantages of doing the new music part for PASIC is that you're done and then you can enjoy PASIC and you've already presented. It's great.
Exactly. Yeah.
Had you played pieces in this style prior to doing this one, whether they were with heavily involved in electronics or whether they were drum set specific?
Kind of. I'm really into doing things with electronics, and I have been for, I would say, like three-ish, four-ish years now. Mm-hmm. So I was very familiar with that. And I've actually only played two drum set pieces, so this is one of them, and then I've played Everything Now Right Now by Robert Hanstein, which is a similar type of structure. It's drum set with fixed electronics and like click track, but very different vibe. I would say this one's much like darker and angular, and that one it's more like fun and funky, I would say, if anything. Sure. So, but yeah, I've played pieces with fixed track. I've done some processed electronics, things like that. So that's kind of been my intro into playing drum set. Actually, I didn't play any drum set in high school. Really. I like dabbled. I did a little bit of practice on my own, but I started learning like grooves and learning to play along with songs in college during my freshman year. So I was a little late to the game. And at that point I kind of had felt like, oh man, everyone here has had that experience. So it's really hard to get together a group of people to play drum set live. So I'm going to do a lot of things with tracks. So I feel like I'm like playing with a person, but it's actually still myself. So I have a weird relationship with that.
But what do you mean? What's weird about it?
I think it's just weird because I think it's actually pretty common for this to be the case for classical percussionists, just feeling like I approach the drum set in a way, if I think about it like a multi-instrument, and if I have notes that are written on the page for me, I feel much more comfortable than if I have to try comping or pull some vocabulary out to improvise with the group. That's like a totally different language to me that I've never really been able to dive into. I hope to at some point, but it's a difficult thing to find time or space for getting a classical percussion degree.
Sure. Yeah. You almost need to force yourself to just find a jazz combo and just be like, all right, like I'm doing this cause I need the reps, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit of an ego check too. It's like, all right, I got to go do this thing that I'm really bad at for a while. So that's the goal. I hope to find time and space to do that soon.
Yeah.
I would love to play more live drum set. It's not my strong suit.
Sure. Well, and it's, I don't know that it, I wouldn't, I'm not sure if it's an ability thing. It could just be you just have to get over the fact that it's just not – you're just not going to, like, pull it off right off the bat. You got to – as you said, you got to spend time on it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a whole different world in a whole nother idiom, I think, to be able to vibe off of people in a room and then make those decisions in the moment. So
Yeah, I hear that. This particular work does it offer any, aside from kind of, I guess, interacting in the way you need to with electronics, is there anything else that's kind of specific about it technically that's a particular challenge or something you kind of were really pushed on?
There are a few things in there that are like really strange. I want to almost call them licks, but they're
not. Sure.
It's because they're like, and I'm like, what is that? So I have to practice this like singular measure of some really weird like thing where my hand is crossing under and then going over here, or like,
yeah.
I have like, so it sounds cool, and that's kind of the point. But some of it is, I don't want to say unidiomatic, but just kind of like strange in the type of idiom that it is. So I would say it's got a few moments like that, just like strings of 16th notes or something similar, that has a weird coordination, especially when my feet are involved in those fast passages and then alternating between, it'll be like hand, hand, foot, but like digga, 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 and just getting the clarity is difficult. So I spend a lot of time just like drilling those measures particularly.
It's almost like dance choreography in some ways, as much as it's, you know, and you have to take that and make that a musical gesture.
Right. That's a good way to put it. And it's funny, I'm not very coordinated, actually. I tell people this all the time. I like trip over my own feet all the time. I spill things. I'm really clumsy. And so I don't think I'm a super coordinated person. I think when I spend a lot of time in a room practicing on things, like, it eventually sticks because it becomes like a physical habit. But there's a lot of like mental effort that goes into the coordination first before that actually like translates over. So
working this piece up, do you spend a lot of time? How much time do you spend outside of the electronics part versus incorporating the electronics part into just like regular practice, slow to fast or something like that?
So it's a mix. When I first started learning it, I was spending no time with the electronics because I mostly just wanted to get the figures learned, work on my timing, work on my feet coordination. And then I would say after like a few weeks, and once I would go like a page or a couple of pages at a time and then add in the electronics once I could play it kind of fast enough. And so I use Logic Pro as my preferred digital audio workspace. Mm-hmm. And so there's this really cool feature called VeriSpeed that you can just take the whole project and make it slower or make it faster. So I'll start at like, okay, -20%, and then I'll play the figure at -20%, and then I'll go up to -15 or whatever. And then as I've been revisiting it, it's been a little different. I think it's actually helpful because I think there's been like a almost like a year gap since I last played it. So, So I'm like relearning it, particularly this month, which feels really good. I love relearning pieces because it's like a little reward. It's like, oh, yay, I remember what this feels like.
Yeah.
So I started actually like last week revisiting it, and I am more comfortable when I can hear the electronics actually, because it's now so, it's very associated with it. So I'll do those like speed games with the track or like work on looping certain sections, but it's nice to hear what's going on in the effects because there's like a trigger and association there. But I still like every couple days or maybe at least for like 20 minutes out of an hour long session will take some time with just a metronome to work out certain things so that I can truly be focused on that instead of fiddling with electronics. So it's a mix.
Yeah. Well, and the other part that's great is that if you're revisiting it, you have kind of all of this new musical knowledge or development you've done where you can start bringing that to a new version of this performance.
I think that's always really cool is to see when you're looking back at a piece to see how your perspective on it has changed or how physically like or technically things have changed at all. Yeah. So I'm having a little bit less of a hard time with some of the figures, which is nice. And I'm like, oh, that's weird, because I didn't think I was working on those exact skills, but everything we do helps everything else in a way. And that's always a nice feeling to feel like there has been progress since a year back. So I've been surprised in some of those ways. If anyone listening is going to PASIC, please pop in. It'll be a fun time. I'm very excited to play it. I'm nervous, but I'm excited. So yeah. It'll hopefully be a good session and good energy in the room.
All right. Thank you so much, Olivia Sirasan. And lastly for today, we'll hear from Catherine Irwin. Catherine is the Director of Percussion Studies at the University of Louisiana, Monroe, and she's part of two sessions at PASIC this year. You'll hear about her second session on tomorrow's show, but for the purposes of today's podcast, she'll be briefly discussing her performance as part of the Percussion Quartet Without Borders. They are performing the work Bird by one of their members, previous podcast guest Alex Smith, and Without Borders also features members Will Alderman and another previous podcast guest, Junju Pan. This performance will take place also at the 3 p.m. New Music Research presentation. And here's Catherine talking about her upcoming PASIC performance.
So I am also performing on Thursday with my quartet, Without Borders. And we are performing an original composition by one of the members of the quartet, Alex Smith. And he currently teaches at University of Central Missouri, percussion, and also there's a technology component with that position. And he's sort of the member of the quartet that has really delved into technology as using it in your compositional process. And I think he's found some really cool ways to do that. And one of them is in this piece. So we're playing a piece called Bird. And it's two movements, and it maybe eventually will be more movements. That's what we've talked about. But he's using drum triggers that we clip onto the drums. And then in Ableton, he's sort of changing based on where we hit the drum or how loud we hit the drum or the rims in some cases. It changes the sound that's coming out of the speakers. So like for the first movement, he recorded Will and me talking into the microphone. And we're just like talking about random stuff. It was just talk. You know, the point was chatter, to have chatter to work with. And he sped it up and then changed the register. So depending on how hard I hit the rim of my tom, the register changes of the chatter. And then Will has another chatter, and then there's another layer of a sound, and Alex is playing and using a vocoder, and Alice is using a mallet station and a microphone that adjusts different sounds and things like that. So it's a pretty cool conglomeration of sounds, I think. And then the second movement is mostly improvisatory, but still using the drum triggers and some different instrumentation, and it's very different. Alex could talk way more about all of the ins and outs of all of that, but I think it's going to be really cool. And I think pretty different than a lot of the other things that are happening. So I'm excited about that. One of the reasons I love playing in my quartet we're all really good friends, which first and foremost, but we also play a wide variety of types of music. You know, we do this electronic thing and then, you know, Will composes some pieces and then we play Bartok string quartet number 5 transcription. And so it kind of runs the gamut in terms of, I guess, percussion music, you know? And so I think that's a cool thing when we go and play places that you get to see a very wide variety of things.
And who is the fourth member?
Alice Pan.
Yeah.
So we have Alice Pan, Alex Smith, and Will Alderman.
And that wraps up part one of our 2024 PASIC preview. Thanks again to Joseph Van Hassel, Melissa Wang, Olivia Sirisan, and Catherine Irwin for their time, and go see their performances this coming Thursday. No rave this week, aside from just go to PASIC. If you're able to go, it's usually a lot of fun, and as good as the clinics and performances are, it's even better to just check in and hang out with your friends. It's so great. See you all there. And that's our show. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and leave a comment and a rating. You can find every episode and the show notes at the homepage at petezambino.com/Pete's Percussion Podcast, the episodes. The show is also on SoundCloud and Spotify and many other podcast locations. If you're on Facebook, like the page Pete's Percussion Podcast. You can find me there on Instagram and X at Pete Zambito or by email at petesperkpod@gmail.com. And I'll catch you tomorrow for part two of our PASIC preview. Until then.